Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. It's Don from Fifth Town in Philly.
Hi, everyone. My name's Dawn. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Dawn.
And I'd like to thank Dave for asking me to come out and share my message with the group. And what an honor it is to travel up and down the turnpike carrying a message of hope. Who would have ever thunk the low-bottom drunk like me would have a message somebody would care to hear about? Amazing what God can do. I have a home group. My home group is Circle of Hope Group. We meet in Fishtown on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. If you're ever in the area, please stop by. We break down the book page by page, line by line, word for word. And my sober date is January 22nd, 2000. I have a sponsor. I have the amazing privilege of sponsoring other women, and in turn, they sponsor other women. And it's an amazing life. When I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous on that day in 2000, I had no idea to what heights my life was about to soar. I had woken up that morning and my little baby, who was about a year and a half old, who was the absolute love of my life, was eating my cigarette butts out of the ashtray. I should say I came to. I don't know if I woke up. And on that day, I was given the greatest gift I've ever been given. I was given the gift of desperation. And when we talk about, you know, Bill talks about it in his story, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, I didn't know how I was ever going to survive that feeling that day of, you know. Thank God, though, I had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous years prior to that, so I knew a place I could go. I had no idea what you guys did here, even though I'd done it before. I didn't know nothing. I thought I knew. I thought I knew what I needed. I thought I knew what the solution was, and I thought I knew everything, basically. Today I understand that I'm still just merely scratching the surface. What an amazing program. I really don't know anything about anything. I am very certain about one thing, though, and that is that the God in my life today is real, and what he can do with broken, helpless, hopeless individuals like myself is beyond my comprehension. Because when I walked in that day, I was a broken shell of a human being. And thank God he didn't give me half the things I thought I needed or what I thought would make me better or were the solution. So a little bit about what it was like. I grew up in a very poor inner city neighborhood called Kensington. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but I was very comfortable in my skin at Somerset by the age of 13, under the L. And my role model was a 16-year-old who had a baby and lived in an apartment on top of a thrift store under the L, smoking cigarettes out her window. And I thought, man, when I grow up, I want to be just like that. I really didn't know anything else. So my mom died when I was real young. My dad, by his own admission, is alcoholic. And, you know, he had gotten into a relationship shortly after my mom died, and that relationship didn't work out. So by the time I was like fifth grade, I guess around fourth or fifth grade, we basically were left to fend for ourselves, me and my two brothers. Although my dad had always provided shelter and clothing and food, we didn't get much of anything else. And I was starved for that sense of belonging, that sense of fitting in that I get here at home in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know that's what I was starved for. I didn't know I was a rebel without a cause. I simply thought I knew everything. And so I had learned at a very young age in that inner city community to compromise my principles. In search of that feeling of fitting in, and none of my friends had any much different life than mine. Most of them are either dead or serving, you know, long prison sentences, and none of us, well, I have, thank God, gotten a college education. No one ever graduated high school or went to college. That's the community I grew up in, and so I started at a very young age, you know, trying to find ways to go to any lengths just to fit in or belong in some kind of group. And but when I was about eighth grade, I had my first drink, and I was a blackout drunk from the very first time, because the moment it touched my lips, that icky feeling inside, that uncomfortable in my own skin, terrified of everything, it left me. I found freedom in that alcohol in the early days. And actually, I thought I'd found a piece of heaven. And I was absolutely sold. There was no way I was turning back. And so that was, I guess, the summer that I finished eighth grade, and I spent the rest of that summer drinking like we drank, and I was supposed to go to a pretty good, well-rounded girls Catholic high school, and a friend of mine had told me about this other Catholic high school, though, for girls that you could get out in 2 years. It was called a business school. You still had to go back after you were done because you didn't have a high school diploma or a GED equivalent, but I just pretended I didn't hear that part. You know, I just, you know, that was the story of my life, the easier, softer way. Just give me the easiest way to get there, and delusional I was. It talks about that in our book, being in full flight from reality, and I was so delusional. And so I got introduced to some other forms of alcohol while I was in that school, and needless to say, it took me 4 years to never graduate from that two-year high school. Me and all my bright ideas, you know. And so that last summer, you know, after I didn't graduate, I spent most of it, you know, just trying to blot out the pain and the misery of letting my dad down, because I know that he had spent a lot of money and had a lot of hope in me going to that, you know, having that Catholic education, because he was illiterate, my dad. He still, till this day, can't read or write, and it was real important to him that we got education. He didn't have much himself, but he went to great lengths to, you know, see that I got that education, and I was the last one that had a chance. Both my brothers had been thrown out of school and gotten their GEDs in prison somewhere or some boys' home or whatever. And I know a lot of his hope was banking on me. So it was like a downward spiral, you know, that summer. And by the end of that summer, I had my brother had come home in the middle of the night and found me curled up behind a trash can in the backyard with my dad's shorts in my hand. My dad was passed out drunk, and I was robbing him all night. And finally got to the point where I was like, I might as well just take the whole set of shorts. I keep sneaking down for 20, 20, 20. You know, I finally got the bright idea, just grab the whole set of shorts. You know. So, the damn dog, if he wouldn't stop barking, if he would have just stopped barking, they never would have caught me, right? So he found me out there, and of course, alcoholic, you know, I want to go and put a little cut on my arm, you know, and cry and say, I need help, and, you know, because I'm a master manipulator, and if they feel sorry for me now, they won't want to punish me for what I've just done. And don't they understand I don't want to take his money? I don't know how not to. And so they, of course, my master manipulating skills worked, and they got me to detox the next morning. And from detox, I went into a 28-day program. And from there, that counselor, she was really good. She convinced me that I should go away for 6 months. And that treatment facility, though, wouldn't have my bed available for so many days, 6 days, 7 days. I don't remember exactly how many days, but I know the night before I was supposed to go, maybe the cat died or something, so I had a drink. You know, it wasn't really the cat. It was just, I know it was that insignificant of whatever happened that I was on the corner of my house thinking, they just want me to drink. They don't understand. And don't they understand? And the thought came into my mind that I'm not going to be sober in 6 months anyway, so I might as well just go now. And off I went. And came crawling back 2 days later. And I managed to call the counselor down there. And they said if I came right then to detox, they would save my bed. And they did that. And so off I went to detox and 6 months of treatment. And I guess it was like 30 days in, I had realized that I was cured, and I really didn't. What I needed really was a boyfriend, maybe some more money, and a couple. You know, I had already had gotten some new jeans and a new haircut. And so here comes this, you know, cute guy through the lunchroom, and sure enough, I found my solution. I don't need to be here anymore. And I think he was in, like, the outpatient part, the IOP, and I was in the inpatient. And so it took about 30 or 60 days for me to realize I can't stay in. I need to be out because he's out. And I could come back every day like they do and do my meetings. And I know what I have to do. And sure enough, I came out and we didn't go very far. I mean, two dead batteries really can't start a car. I mean, I'm convinced of that today. I'm certainly convinced of that today. But we tried. We tried really hard. And actually, I think what happened is I found somebody better. That's why I want to get really completely honest. I found a drug dealer. He wasn't a drug doer, so I thought this would be great because he had a lot of money and fancy watches and a nice car and a whole bunch of sneakers lined up in his room. And I thought we would just sail off into the sunset. I think I left out the part that he was married to. And I also that I met him in the visiting room at Gratersford. And I knew I was going to get his phone number and track it to him before I even seen him because his wrist fell out of the car first and I saw the fancy watch and was like, man, he is gorgeous. Delusional, to say the least, in full flight from reality. But needless to say, me and my great ideas, I was going to get the digits before I left. And, of course, you know, I managed to get the digits. And I guess about 3 months into that relationship, he had come up with this amazing idea how we could both make some money. And here's the one thing. The one thing is I was trying to go to AA. But when I went to AA, what I found was all the cute guys were really married. So already married, I mean. So, like, why would I come back here? I was convinced that was what I needed. I had no clue what was wrong with me. I was so sick spiritually, and I didn't know. I really just didn't know that I suffered from a spiritual malady. And I just thought if you gave me a cute husband, a good job, a nice house up on a hill, away from all you people. Notice I said all you people, because you were the problem, really. It wasn't me. Then I would be fine, and I would sail off into the sunset. And, you know, I've come to understand today that there isn't a guy cute enough, a house big enough, or a car fancy enough to fill that gaping hole that was in my soul. And I really just didn't know that then. So off we go down the East Coast. conning elderly women out of their life savings. And that's not who I want to be. Even sick and suffering, deep inside I know that this is not who I want to be. And after our very first, I guess we called it score back then, after our very first score, I will never forget, once again, that feeling of incomprehensible demoralization. I was sober. I was as far removed from alcohol as I was ever going to be. And I was in the bathroom of this hotel room, and I felt like the biggest piece of crap that had ever walked the face of the earth. But on the outside of that hotel room, they were having a party. And the party was for me, because I had scored thousands of dollars that day. But I had to compromise everything I believed in to make that score happen. And so I just wiped away my tears and I got up and I walked out and I joined the party. And after compromising your principles so many times, it just gets easier, you know. And I have no idea that I'm guaranteed to drink again. I think I'm doing good. I really think I'm doing good because we're making money and my boyfriend's cute and he goes home to his wife every night. But, you know, I know he loves me. I'm certain of that. And so, of course, within a couple months, I drank. I drink because I have to drink. I drink because drink is my solution. I drink because there's no other way for me to get out of this restless, irritable, and discontent feeling I have. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to seek comfort. I have to be comforted. And so I drink. And I end up, you know, of course, I like to smoke alcohol, so... I'm up all night and I'm barricaded in this room because, again, I'm living this lie. Like, I meet this drug dealers don't date drug addicts. He thinks I'm this nice girl who doesn't drink or do drugs. Or I'm living a lie. My whole life is a lie. And so I'm barricaded in the apartment and I end up getting a flat in the middle of the night, and I'm back and forth to North Philly on a flat tire with my $2 bills, begging the dealers to just, you know, please take the $2 bills. And I come to a day or two later, and I mean, everybody knows that, you know, we're pounding our fists, like, how did I get here again? I don't understand. I don't understand because I don't understand what's wrong with me. I think that if I just don't drink, I'll be fine. And so I remember falling to my knees and begging God, please, God, please, please don't let me go back to where I was a year ago. And I can't go back there. I can't see that look on my dad's face when he drives down the avenue and sees me there at 5 o'clock in the morning and knows that I'm doing things that are killing him. And I get dressed and I go out and I take the train over to New York and I proceed to make another score. And this time, though, I didn't know it then, but God really heard my prayer that morning. And he said, okay, I'll make sure you don't go back there. So that morning while I was in New York, I had been arrested for my crimes. And it was actually the next morning. So I ended up staying over the woman's house with her. And we were going back to get more money the next day, and the detectives were there waiting. And she was 80-something, and I had her dress on and her shoes on. And I end up, you know, being arrested, and I was in the cell. And, like, in Philadelphia, I don't know how your system works, but this is, like, 20 years ago, 18 years ago. Like, I had been arrested numerous times. You just go in, you get 8 or 12 hours, and you sign your own bail, and you get out, and no big deal, right? So in New York, it's just a little different. It's 72 hours before you see a judge, and when the 72 hours was up, I thought I would sign my paper and get out, and God had a little different plan. So after court, they walked me down the hall, this long hall, and I said, well, where am I going? And they said, you're on the bus. I'm like, the bus? Where's that going? They said, you're going to the island. And here's an example of just how uneducated and ignorant and delusional I was. I didn't know that Alcatraz isn't on the East Coast. And I really, 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 with every fiber of my being, believed I was going to Alcatraz. And I called home and I was crying. I said, they're sending me to Alcatraz. And my boyfriend said, don't let them see you cry. Don't you dare let them see your weakness. You're not going to Alcatraz. You're going to Rikers Island. Okay, that's a little better. I mean, I was terrified. I was 19 years old, and I was on my way to Rikers Island. Still delusional as can be, though. I still thought, well, they're going to come get me. I mean, we just scored $15,000, right? They'll find a way to come and get me. I sent the money back before the cops got me. I mean, they're going to help, right? Oh, so sad. But not really sad. God is amazing. My God is an amazing God. And I tell you that I know to this day, looking back in hindsight, I see how amazingly powerful He is. And He does move mountains. And He moved a mountain for me. And when I said, God, please, please, please don't let me go back, He said, okay. And He picked me up and He dumped me on Rikers Island. And it took about 10 months there for me to realize that. But I remember having a spiritual experience there, because I read the New Testament. Believe me, you seek God when you're in prison, because there's nowhere else to turn. Of course people go to prison, they get religious. We're broken. We're at the bottom. I'm thinking, I really had in my mind this idea, like, I wonder, was it worse being addicted to smoking alcohol, or is this worse? This has got to be the worst experience in my life ever. At least there I have an opportunity to get out, maybe. Here, I can't get out. And I understand today there's no comparison, but I didn't then, and I really thought that maybe this was worse than that. But I remember walking down the halls of Rikers Island feeling freer than I'd ever felt in my entire life. You know why? Because I had begun to form a personal, intimate relationship with God of my understanding for the first time. You know, that Catholic school, God, I believed He was there. I understood there was something up there, wasn't questioning that, but He was God, and I was a low-life piece of crap, and why would He want anything to do with a scumbag liar like me? And I had never done anything worth anything in my life, and I can't comprehend why He would love me. I wasn't worthy. So reading the New Testament just helped me to understand basic things. Because it's as simple as, you know, our principles. Like, don't lie, steal, and cheat, and you might have a good life. You know, a chance at one anyway. You know, love your neighbor, do things for others. It just was so basic and simple to me. And I ended up getting sentenced to 2 1/3 to 7 years, and I went through this program called Lakeview Shock. It was a military-style thing, and when you get there, they shave your hair and they cut your nails, and you're going to do 180 days of boot camp, and you can get. I got out maybe like 6 months earlier. It wasn't no big time, but a month earlier would have been worth it for me. But I know having that experience with praying to a God of my understanding and being on a PT deck after running 5 miles before the sun's even coming up and doing 45 minutes of physical training before you've even eaten breakfast, you learn some things about yourself you didn't know previously. And I managed to get my GED while I was there, and I managed to complete this program, and I really did have a spiritual experience. The only problem is I didn't understand it doesn't have a shelf life. So So when I came home, I went to AA, and all the cute guys were married again, and all the girls were, they were cuter than me or prettier than me or had nicer clothes or hair than me, so I didn't want to know them. I didn't really see why I would come back. It didn't make sense to me. I was going to handle this myself. And I did manage to muster up some time sober without lying, stealing, and cheating anymore. And, you know, those things I learned in boot camp, I knew how. I did have a different work ethic, and I understood that I had to work. But not much different. It was like, I'm waitressing, and if someone gives me a bonus tip tonight and I make 50 extra, I'm so calling out tomorrow. And then I'm crying on the phone on Friday, like, poor me, you know. I don't have anything. I remember spending hours, squandering countless hours out of my life on the phone with my cousin, who is not an alcoholic, crying that there must be something wrong with us. I must have a chemical imbalance in my head. What's wrong with me? I had no clue what was wrong with me. I was an alcoholic, staying sober, clutching the sides of my chair every day. I was restless, irritable, and discontent, and I could not function in the world. Alcohol had been my solution for all those years, and now they took it away, and I don't know what to do because I am spiritually sick. And I want to do good. I want to be a good person. More than anything, I just want to make people happy and please people, but I don't know how selfish and self-centered I am. I don't have a clue. I can't see it. And so I eventually drink again. I drink because I have to drink, because left untreated, the old thinking returns, and I will surely drink again. And I had attempted to go to some church and stuff, and it wasn't working because that's not home for me. This is home for me. Alcoholics Anonymous, I know today is where my purpose is. It's where I belong. It's where I find people like me, and I fit in. I fit perfectly here. And so I drink again, and then, you know, needless to say, it comes out to I meet the guy, we get pregnant, we get the house, then we get married. Of course, we do it all backwards. And the end of it, I tell you, I was a broken shell of a human being when I walked into that meeting that night, and I knew that my daughter was eating my cigarette butts that morning. And I'll tell you, again, I had no idea what heights my life was about to soar. How amazing is this God? So I go to AA and I put my hand up and I say I need help and I get a sponsor, and I'm still full of a lot of pride and ego and self-centered fear, and you know, a lot of things are blocking me off from really getting into the work, but I do go somewhat through the work. I think I went through the work. You got to remember, I'm an alcoholic, and you guys are telling me that I have a disease. It centers in my mind. It's coupled by a physical allergy, and I don't believe it. I think I'm just weak. And that's what our first step talks about, having to get to a place where we can concede to our innermost self. And I hadn't really been able to concede because I think I'm just weak. And I get the opportunity to go through the work. And I was somewhere one day and I heard somebody read the promises. I'm several years sober and I'm sponsoring girls and I think I'm doing good in AA. And it was very clear to me that those promises had not come true in my life. I was not free. I could not even serve lunch at my daughter's lunchroom because you need a criminal background check to serve lunch in a Catholic grade school. And I could not tell those people about my past. And I couldn't tell them about it because I couldn't see how it would benefit anyone anywhere. I was still very ashamed. They talk about us knowing a new happiness, a new freedom, and being able to see how our experience could benefit the alcoholic who still suffers. And I was not there. And so I was able to go to a woman and slam down my book and say, these things haven't happened for me, and I need to know why. And we proceeded to go through the work. And they were breaking down the first step for me, and I got to go to lunch or dinner with my best friend who's not alcoholic, and she says, do you mind if I have a beer? And I'm like, of course not. I don't care if you have a beer. And so first thing I realized, see, I'm a very visual learner. If you show me things and let me see with my eyes, I really do better than, like, reading or... So she, first thing I noticed, this is right in the beginning where they're telling me that the normal temper drinker has two drinks, gets a little wheezy and goes, whoa, I better stop, this doesn't feel right. And that doesn't happen to me because I have an allergy, an allergic reaction to alcohol. An abnormal thing happens when I drink. And so first and foremost, she orders a half pitcher. Who does that? It's like 50 cents more for the whole pitcher. Who does that? So then the half pitcher still has half in it when she starts yawning and saying, God, I can't wait to go home and get in my pajamas and get in bed. That has never happened to me when I put alcohol in me, ever. And there I was on that cold November evening in the back of a pub when I was able to concede to my innermost self that I am certainly alcoholic. And now I'm screwed. What do you do? And then I was able to proceed, you know, to take a look at the rest of the steps. And, you know, came to believe, absolutely still coming to believe. My beliefs have changed so many times over the years, you know, and... new and exciting experiences happen all the time. I made the decision. I struggle because in my mind, see, I have a disease that centers in my mind. I'm trying to solve problems with the same mind that created these problems. I don't know that, though. And I'm going, I don't know. I don't understand how to turn my will and my life over to God. And very, very dear friend of mine who does big book studies where I'm from says, Dawn, your will is just your thinking. That's it? My thinking? I could probably do that if I asked God to help me turn over my thinking. And, you know, we sit down, I write a fourth step, and I'm in a meeting one day, and somebody reads out of the big book, the page where it talks about selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, this we believe, the root of our problem or the core of our disease, or I don't know the exact words. But it was like fireworks went off on the 4th of July because for the first time in my life I could see the truth about me. And it wasn't your fault I drank, and it wasn't my dad's fault I drank, and that I was the problem, and that my whole life I'd squandered so many hours out of my life wandering around the streets of Kensington aimlessly thinking I was a really good person who got dealt a really bad deal. And today I understood that wasn't the truth, that I was a sick person. I was the problem, and that I can't change you or my dad or the cat or the dog, that there was hope for me, though. That if I was willing to go a little deeper and get a little more intimate with some of my character defects, I swear to God, the first time I did 6 and 7, I really wanted to have God remove these defects of character, but I didn't believe I had any. I was really, I'm like, I don't lie anymore. I don't steal. I don't cheat. I don't know what character defects you mean. And I didn't have the proper person armed with the facts, the truth, to be able to sit me down and say, Dawn, we're talking about selfishness and self-centered fear and pride and ego. And these are the character defects that we're telling you are killing you. And they're not working for you. And so I got an amazing opportunity to look at me for the first time. And wow, I felt sick to my stomach, but I was absolutely ready at that point to have God remove these because I didn't want to be that person anymore. And I had never in my entire life considered what someone else was thinking or how I could be useful to you. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for years hoping to get a boyfriend or a husband or maybe a job or some kind of good talk that would make me feel better. I never came here, ever, not once, thinking, what could I bring? Weren't you supposed to help me? How could I help you? I don't know. It just, wow, what a freeing moment that was. And, you know, we looked at 8 and 9, and I still I could never repay all those women I took the money from, and I have no way. I didn't get arrested for a lot of them, so I don't even know who they are. I don't remember them, but I had one that was on paper, and I needed to pay restitution. I thought I'd gone through the work, but what I really had was an eighth step list that had not been attended to. And I was terrified because I was on probation until I paid that $5,000, and I didn't know that I could ever do that because I was still running my own show. I was still running on self-centered fear, and I was driven by 100 forms of fear on any given day. I was paralyzed in my house, could not serve lunch in the kids' school, could not face the world, and I was sober several years, and I had no idea that the moment I became willing to look at that list and willing, just willing, to make that right, that I was going to write the whole $5,000 out in the first check. No idea. It only talked about a willingness. So I prayed until I got willing. And the moment I became willing, we paid the restitution. And in that moment, I had no clue what that was doing for me. I had no clue that that was going to free me up to go back to school to become a registered nurse. I had no idea that I was paralyzed by or driven by 100 forms of fear prior to that because I was a horrible person. Who would ever hire me and how could I do this? And I had no idea. And right before I went back to school, I had another amazing experience happen. My ex-husband and I were not together because he was still drinking. And we owned a property, though. I had been renting it out, and I was staying down the shore with my cousin, and I was going to come back. And when I came back, when I gave the thing notice that I'm moving out of my apartment, I was supposed to get a refund check that would help me pay the mortgage when I first came back until I got a job and all. And you have to turn it in 30 days before in order. I turned it in on the 31st day or maybe the 32nd day. Maybe there was 30 days in that month. I don't know, but it was a day late and they never refunded my money. And he was arrested and in the county jail, and I was a single mom with a little baby and no money, and I was going to lose my home. And because it took me like forever to find a job. I did find a job. I found this job that I absolutely despised. I hated it. I absolutely hated it. But I was making okay money, and they were going to give me health benefits, but I would have to take my daughter to daycare at like 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I would have to like trudge on the train and in the L and in the rain and the freezing rain and the snow to pick her up at like 6 o'clock. And I was always so afraid I'm going to be late, they're going to call the cops because I can't get there on time. I just can't get there on time. And 2 weeks after I was at that job, they told me they were going to let me go. And that had never happened before. Not sober. Who gets fired from a job sober? I remember walking out of that job and looking up, and I just knew I was going to be all right. I didn't know how or why, but I looked up and I said, God, I know you have a plan. I haven't done anything to deserve this. I'm not a liar. I haven't stolen anything. I haven't misled anybody. I'm having a real hard time seeing it right now, though. Please don't let me make any decisions based on fear. And I went about my day, and that week, my ex-husband got out of jail, and his father owns his own company, so he could make the money to catch up on the mortgage because we're going in 3 months behind now. And he went to the recovery house, and I stayed there, and he's like, I could get the money, just call them and see what they need. And we got the payment plan and all that, and the next day they called and said, we just need one more thing. I said, what do you need? They said, we need 2 pay stubs in order to make this final. And I knew in that instant why I had that job for 2 weeks. The following month, I was registering for nursing school, and my God is a good God. And when I first registered for school, my first semester of college, I couldn't even take one college course, not one, because in my head, I was so stupid. And I remember crying, and I said to the lady, I don't even know why I'm doing this. I'm so stupid. She said, you're not stupid. Why are you crying? You're trying to do something to change your life. And I don't know. She gave me some pep talk, but it really helped. It really helped, because on my first Mother's Day, I was passing my little baby out the door to my dad because I had been up all night, and I couldn't care for her. And on my eighth Mother's Day, I was walking down the aisle, and I was collecting my diploma, and I was graduating with honors. And that's the girl who got her GED in the New York State Penitentiary. And that's how amazing my God is. And I owe all that to you guys, to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have a shot in hell without you people. I, of myself, am absolutely nothing. And my sponsor pounded into my head, my new sponsor, took me through the work. She said, Dawn, you got to trust it will work for the countless others who came before you. It will work for you, too, if you're willing to do what we've done. And I held on to that every day, and I said, show me. I never questioned my sponsor, ever. And I had that experience in jail with God and all. I remember not wanting to read We Agnostic, and I thought, I dare not call her and tell her that. I just did what she said do, and we went through the book, and we opened it up, and, you know, it said what to do, and we did it. And then we moved to the next thing, and we did it, and it works. It really works. And I've had an amazing journey, and I've had an amazing opportunity to get free from the bondage of me. That's the beauty of it. Any given day, I'm reading the book, The Soul of Sponsorship. It's a book that a bunch of letters back and forth from Father Ed Dowling, who was Bill Wilson's spiritual advisor. And I just read today, it was so beautiful, that progress in a spiritual life comes through detachment, not from power, prestige, and all those things that I thought I needed, that big fancy car, that big house on the hill. And I do have a beautiful life today, but I don't have, nor do I need or want those things. I understand that my purpose in life is to serve God and my fellows. And any given day, that is my prayer, that God will show me where and how I could be of maximum usefulness to Him and His people. It's not about me today. And it's not always easy. I'm an alcoholic. I fall short on many days. I have to bang myself in the head and go, stop thinking about you some days. Like, by default, it just wants to go back to me always. That's what makes me alcoholic. I am, like, so self-centered to the core. And I would love to just spend hours in my room just thinking about me, you know. Seriously, I would love to, but it doesn't work like that. It works when we move our feet. This is an action program. People told me if you take action, Dawn, you'll get results. You know, and 6 months ago, for 5 years, I was in a beautiful relationship with a really nice person. And 6 months ago, we realized that we didn't probably want the same things in life. And I got the opportunity for the first time in my life to disconnect from a relationship lovingly. How does that happen? To disconnect lovingly. And I want to tell you, though, the real me, the alcoholic me, wants to go home and get in a fetal position and cry and go, poor me, and I miss them, and all these things. But what you guys have given me is an opportunity on so many occasions to suit up and show up and to move my feet. And for that, I will never be able to repay Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't spent one day in the fetal position. Not one. Have there been sad times? Absolutely. But 12 years of doing this deal, I've gotten a little bit of experience, and I understand that this is a quote from Mother Teresa. Rather than avoid the pain, I try to get intimate with it because it's an opportunity for me to know my Creator better. We're going to seek Him when we were at our lowest point, and I can't heal these flaws in my character. I can't heal these basic instincts. God gave them to me. He can, though, but I got to stay out of His way. It's really important that I stay out of His way, because when I start relying on me or trying to fix problems with the same head to create them, or even thinking that I might know, might even have a clue what it is that He has planned for me in my life, it gets all messed up again, because I don't know nothing. Thank you, AA, for teaching me the truth. I don't know nothing. I know that this stuff works, that self-sacrifice and constant work, intense work with other alcoholics on any given day is the way out of me. It absolutely works. And it's available to every single person in this room. That's the beauty of it. But we get in the way of our own journeys, and we don't have to do that. If you If you open up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you go through the work, you're guaranteed. It says haven't had a spiritual awakening as the result. We're not saying maybe, kind of, maybe. It's guaranteed the result of these 12 steps. That's what happens. We get to get free from the bondage of ourselves. And whew, what an amazing feeling it is to be at perfect peace and comfort alone in my room with me. Who would have ever thought? That's all I have. Thank you, AA.